Today, how a decade of austerity has impacted on one village in Yorkshire. This week marks 10 years since the former Conservative Chancellor George Osborne got to his feet in Parliament and announced the details of a spending review that would reshape British society.
The biggest spending cut since World War II, the Chancellor delivers his long-awaited spending review.
Are the cuts going to hurt, Chancellor?
The Treasury Double Act aiming to slash the deficit. £81 billion wiped off spending in 4 years.
We've reformed welfare and cut waste. We've made sure we're all in this together, and we've taken our country back from the brink of bankruptcy. A stronger Britain starts here, and I commend this statement to the House.
In the decades since austerity began, child poverty has increased. More people are using food banks, and there's been a huge rise in the numbers forced to sleep rough on our streets. As life in Britain has changed, so has the language of politicians. And in recent years, Conservative leaders have sought to move away from what Boris Johnson once described as the A word.
Because a decade after the financial crash, people need to know that the austerity it led to is over and that their hard work has paid off.
I've never particularly liked the term that you just used to describe government economic policy, and it certainly not be part of our approach.
But for Guardian columnist John Harris, who spent these past 10 years travelling across the country to find out what impact austerity has had on communities, improving people's lives is going to take much more than changing the rhetoric.
Austerity is ongoing. It's very easy to say, oh, austerity's finished, when the reality is quite different. So I take that with a huge pinch of salt.
The country now faces an economic slump far worse than the one experienced after the 2008 crash. And after years of budget cuts, many councils say they could go bankrupt unless the government bail them out this time. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus. After 10 years of austerity, will the government do things differently as a new economic crisis approaches? John, this week you wrote an article for The Guardian to mark 10 years since George Osborne announced deep cuts to public spending and the start of austerity in Britain. And you chose to focus on Thurnscoe, which is a village in the borough of Barnsley in South Yorkshire. What's it like there? What kind of place is it?
Thurnscoe, like a lot of villages in and around Barnsley, has a past or a recent past that's pretty much defined by coal and coal mining. So it was a pit village. And I think probably in the perception of certainly the older people who live there, in its identity, it kind of still is a pit village. There's one bit of amazing symbolism in the midst of all this, which is not far from Thurnscoe, on the site of a former long since closed down colliery called Houghton Main. There is now a huge distribution centre run by ASOS or ASOS, I'm never sure how to pronounce it, the online fashion retailer, which employs thousands of people, but I think at any given time, 500 people are on site. It's been through this huge transition in the last 30 or 40 years. And just, you know, places like that, as much as they might have subsequently found their feet, those things leave scars. You know, if a place for decades is defined by one economic activity and suddenly that disappears, that's quite a thing to have to deal with.
And you spoke to a woman who's lived there for many years called Charlotte.
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Yeah, you're very, yeah, no, you're really loud. That's great. So,
who is she and what does she do?
So Charlotte Williams is the chief executive of an organisation called the Station House Community Association.
I'm Charlotte Williams and I'm chief executive at Station House Community Association.
And the Station House Community Association was founded just before the pits closed. And it's evolved, as I understand it, to be a sort of childcare provider. I think it's run as a charity, but it does much more than childcare. So it has playgroups during the day. And then in order to make working easier for local parents in normal times prior to the pandemic, they have a minibus, as I understand it, that goes around local schools and picks kids up and brings them back there. so they can then be kind of looked after and have activities to do and all that before their parents finish work.
No young parents have only ever known the austerity measures as being a sort of teenager grown up. And again, they're very locked into the type of work that's available to them, because transport links are poor, so you can only get to where you can get to. So it's the low-paid, low-skilled work that doesn't seem to have much career progression.
Charlotte and the association, it felt to me when I was talking to her, are very much at the sort of centre of the life of the place, and they understand what people are going through, the issues people face, people's sense of the future, people's sense of the past and all that. So she was an amazing person to talk to. My work on this piece, though it would ordinarily involve direct encounters with people, it was all done on the basis of long phone calls with people, getting them to tell me in as fine detail as possible about what was going on. And Charlotte was amazing at that.
And what did she tell you about Thurnsco and about the community there?
So I was asking her specifically about what austerity, which if you're not careful, austerity can often be an abstract noun, you know, like you can talk about it without understanding it in human terms. She told me in a very vivid sense about what austerity meant in Thurnsco. And there were two things that she talked about in particular. One was the local children's centre, which up until the point that the cuts arrived and government policy changed, was known as a Sure Start Centre. That was the kind of government brand.
Got the best access to the best healthcare. Sure Start stands alongside the NHS as one of Labour's finest achievements.
And that provided a full range of help and services for parents and children, including childcare, but also including, you know, baby massage, stay and play, all those things that we associate, those of us with long enough memories, with Sure Start centres. And the range of services that that place offers now has drastically come down.
Well, you used to be able to purchase childcare to enable you to get to work, and now they only offer the funded childcare, which is either 15 or 30 hours a week at the time that they say the hours are. So you can't say, well, I only work Monday and Tuesday, so can I have 15 hours Monday and 15 hours Tuesday? No, it is set. So it's no longer a place where you can get childcare that would allow you to get to work.
The wider fact is that in Barnsley Borough, there used to be 18 children's centres that provided a full range of services, and now it's 6. So the rest of the children's centres are still there, but they're not providing the full range of services anymore. So they refer to them as spokes surrounding these hubs that are central centres. But obviously that just means that services inevitably are less accessible for people. The quality of so-called early intervention is much reduced. You know, the sort of dependability of those services has come down. And that's a direct result of the cut.
Let's go back to that point in 2010 when the Conservative government adopted this approach of austerity. What were the intentions of that government and of the Chancellor, George Osborne, at the time?
So in the course of my work for The Guardian making videos, I can remember sort of scurrying around Conservative conference in 2010 or 2011, early on.
Is the so-called cuts agenda motivated out of necessity or ideology?
Easy. Necessity.
And saying, is this a set of political decisions? In other words, are you doing this by choice or is it a matter of necessity? Now, that was a slightly mischievous question because all of them said, oh, we don't want to do this. This is just necessity. We're doing this very reluctantly.
With an enormous budget deficit by the previous Labour government, the largest budget deficit in Europe, and we simply have to tackle that if we want to bring our economy back to health.
But you could sense there was a political project behind this, which was that they felt that the state was too large, and that people had to be more self-reliant, and that it was time to sort of cut the public sector down because it had grown too big. Now, that has a long, in Barnsley, that's a particularly sort of vivid story, because the key historical event in Barnsley and the surrounding area, given how important coal mining was the miners' strike of 1984-5.
Today's demonstration was a final act of defiance before the return to work. But with no settlement and no amnesty in sight, it could well mark the start of more troubles in the Yorkshire coalfield.
Because once the miners are defeated, by extension, the trade union movement as a whole is defeated, really. And then the Conservative Party can do what it likes. And privatisation of nationalised industries then proceeds apace. And that sort of reinvention of the idea of what public services are and what people can expect, that then shifts quite considerably. And when David Cameron and George Osborne and Nick Clegg then get into power, I don't think it's unreasonable to understand what they did over that five-year period as being the sort of culmination of that project, which really got going once the miners had been defeated. So in Barnsley, all of this story is very rich with symbolism, you know. Why haven't we got a children's centre anymore? You know, why has the spending power of our council been cut by 33%? Well, if you take the long view, you could say, well, the kind of origin story of that lies in the defeat of the miners.
I mean, they would say, and they did say at the time, that they were fixing the roof after Labour crashed the economy, though, right?
Yes, that's what they said. And they also said that George Osborne said, and I quote, "Everyone will share in the rewards when we succeed. When we say that we are all in this together, we mean it."
We made a promise to the British people that we would repair our badly broken economy. No longer paying £1 billion of child benefit to households with a higher rate taxpayer. A new welfare state where it always pays to work.
Yes, and George Osborne did say that we were all in this together. But you, as you say, your reporting and the reporting by your colleagues at The Guardian over the last decade has shown that regionally, this just isn't true either, is it?
No, and that's the other, quite apart from the sort of soap operatic aspects about, you know, the way those people's lives have turned out compared to the people who bore the brunt of the cuts. The Guardian earlier this week ran this really, really sort of striking story about the fact that if you look at the figures, councils that are run by the Labour Party in northern post-industrial places, they on average have had much higher levels of spending cuts to have to cope with. The most stark proof of that is that Barnsley lost 33% of its local spending power from 2010 to 2020, and in Wokingham in Berkshire, where there didn't used to be coal mines, the figure was 9.6%. So that's quite remarkable.
Why is it that Labour councils have suffered so much more?
I mean, one of the reasons is they have less resources to draw on. So in Wokingham, as far a place like Wokingham, more affluent places, your take from council tax and business rates is proportionally higher. So that certainly helps. But I guess you can also argue that when they were making the cuts, the government should have been mindful of that and should have said, well, hold on a minute, these places here are going to suffer disproportionately more, and that's going to have all sorts of pretty dire social consequences, and that's something we should bear in mind. But that didn't happen, or if it did happen, it didn't happen nearly enough. And we're still sort of living with that, really.
Before the austerity cuts, everything came, everybody said, ring the council, they'll sort it out. Oh, grass verges aren't cut. Ring the council, they'll sort it out. Oh, my kid needs a vaccination. Oh, ring the council, they'll know what to do and that. And we've had to move away from that massively in the last 10 years because that's just not, there's just no money for that.
Local government, you know, councils like Barnsley Borough Council, traditionally have depended for most of their spending power on money from central government. Chiefly something called the Revenue Support Grant, which has come down hugely in the last 10 years. But that's the way it's worked, you know. The government has a big pot of money in Whitehall and Westminster, and they distribute it to councils. And when they began to cut that very, very drastically, what they were effectively doing was handing responsibility for a lot of cuts down to local councils. And so it looked like, very, very superficially, I suppose, to many people, as if it was the council taking these decisions. Whereas in fact, their hands were completely tied because their money from government had been cut down so severely.
So what cuts did Barnsley Council have to make? I mean, you've talked about how childcare has been affected in the area with Charlotte, but what other things have changed for people as a result of austerity measures?
Very, very basic things. So the council used to run youth centres, joys of table tennis and warm Coke, right? But they're really valuable things. But all of the youth centres closed. As I understand it, there have been quite drastic cuts to subsidies for public transport. Just the fact that the libraries are open irregular hours now. Internet access is delivered via libraries. We forget that for people who haven't got the internet at home, right? To all intents and purposes, the library is like a community centre, only it's a bit quieter than most community centres. So as someone said to me there, every time you want to go to the library now, you have to check your watch. Now, that might sound like a small thing, but I don't think it is. And then you get to the other element of austerity, which I think is often missed, right, is what I would call ambient austerity, right, where it's not about a direct effect on a service. If every time you leave the house and there's noticeably more litter in the streets and the grass verges aren't being mown as often And in the park, the slides and swings are all busted up and rusty because there isn't the budget to fix them. Those things have a huge impact on people's sort of collective psychology. And I don't think, or I certainly think it's very difficult to use words like aspiration, that's a word our politicians are very fond of, when people's immediate environment is downgraded. And that's what's happened all over the country. And it's happened in Barnsley as well, you know.
So then I started writing these sonnets and realised they're probably harder than you think. But it's just been a good thing to write about the different ways that I and the place have felt in lockdown. More personal than kind of geographical, if you like.
Ian McMillan, the poet, who was born not far from Barnsley and still lives there, he said to me that that sort of ambient aspect of austerity, he said it was like mood music, but it's all in a minor key. There's a sadness to it, right? And that's in your immediate field of vision all the time.
After this, how, despite the cuts, Barnsley has found creative ways to improve life for people in the community. John, Barnsley, we should say, is a Labour council and it's experienced some of the worst cuts in England over the last 10 years. You spoke to the council leader, Stephen Houghton. What did he tell you about how they've adapted to losing so much money?
Stephen Houghton has been the leader of the Borough Council in Barnsley since 1996.
I have to say, what we've done in Barnsley is a bloody miracle. We have produced a miracle in 10 years.
So he's one of those council leaders who has this sort of wealth of experience and this air of sort of confidence about him. And he said, once the crash of 2008 had happened, he and his colleagues were well aware that everything was going to change and that cuts were erasing certainty. So they began to make preparations for all of this. And some of the sort of early austerity that arrived towards the end of Gordon Brown's government before David Cameron and George Osborne came along. And Stephen Houghton and the council were well aware that they would have to really reinvent what the council did to try and deliver as much as they could for a lot less money. And what that meant was a sort of culture change in the way that the council worked. And a lot of things were sort of devolved, decentralised to a kind of hyper-local levels. That it's not like places just went, oh God, here are the cuts, what are we going to do? And we're kind of helpless about it. They responded to it in this very, very creative way.
And has that also filtered down into the community itself? You've described how austerity has devastated many aspects of life in Barnsley, but have people come together and filled the gaps left by cuts to funding?
Talking to people in Barnsley, they all talked a lot about how there is sort of more voluntary activity now. So there are these schemes whereby local communities or local community groups can kind of adopt a park and take it upon themselves to look after it. The existence of some of the sort of charitable things that we're talking about, like the Station House Community Association in Thurnscoe, that's a good example of sort of community endeavour. And to use an awful political cliche, it's had to sort of step up. Now, for all its faults, and it had lots, the traditional public sector, you always knew it was going to be there next year or the year after that. That was the whole point, right? The problem when things become over-reliant in the absence of government money on the voluntary sector is sometimes they become more fragile.
So things are more fragile than they used to be. But has this renewed community spirit been good for Barnsley too?
I would say the story of austerity in the last 10 years in Barnsley, it's very nuanced and complicated, and it's full of bad things that shouldn't have happened, but it's also full of good things. Because when they are presented with adversity and difficulty, very often communities come together to try and make things different. And Barnsley has had the advantage that it's been led by this pretty creative, almost visionary, you get the sense, borough council. So in 2013, at the absolute nadir of austerity, levering in money from the EU, ironically enough, and I think the Heritage Lottery Fund as well, they were able to raise the lion's share of £4 million, which was the starting costs for this museum called Experience Barnsley.
So many objects in here that connect to so many people.
But to walk in here and see actual artifacts that I've heard of or I have a connection to in some way from a memory, It's unbelievable.
And so it's a genuinely sort of popular museum, and it's in the town hall. And that opened in the absolute teeth of austerity. And Ian Macmillan, the Barnsley-based poet, said to me, it felt miraculous that that could happen in the midst of austerity. He said it felt like we were sort of swimming against the tide.
The story of Thurnscoe and Barnsley more widely feels like the story of a lot of places in northern England, a place that lost its mining industry and with it hundreds of jobs that haven't been replaced with ones that are secure or well paid. A decade of austerity has taken away a lot of support for communities, and now coronavirus means it faces an uncertain economic future. What did people you spoke to there say about how the pandemic might change things again?
Well, the leader of Barnsley Borough Council, Stephen Houghton, pointed out to me the sort of painful nature of the COVID experience, not just in terms of people getting ill and dying, but in terms of where it arrived in the midst of the story of Barnsley in the last 10 years. So the council had just got to the point that it was able to start thinking about spending money again. And then they get hit with this thing, which obviously hugely increases their spend in terms of things like social care, but also it reduces their revenues because councils depend on things like car parking charges. And so what he said, and this is a quote, he said, what COVID means is we're back to austerity again. Now, it doesn't have to be like that. The government could make a choice to finally get to grips with what a mess the finance of local councils is in and change things and not just plug these gaps, but begin to understand the importance of local government and local services. And I guess they're still waiting. I mean, there is this sense of anticipation that the government is going to announce at least some extra money going to local councils. But at the moment, no one has any great faith that it's going to be enough to cover the losses. So that's one way in which COVID's had an impact. And the other thing is that basic public services can't operate. So at the Station House Community Association in Thurnscoe, there are 8 staff, 7 have been furloughed. And they're not able to operate their childcare and playgroups and after-school provision and all the rest of it.
And so many cuts have been made already to areas like Barnsley. And we know that the UK is going to experience a very sharp economic downturn as a result of coronavirus. I mean, is this just going to mean more cuts again, and what could be lost?
The question is, what is there left to cut? You know, the core of what Barnsley Borough Council does in terms of its statutory legal responsibilities is children and adult social care. Now that takes up over 60% of its budget as things stand, right? And the rest of these services have had to be run in this creative way, or some of them are being run on a shoestring. Don't forget, clearly, that the need for services only increases in times of economic hardship.
My fear is, as people are now looking at going back to work, some people are being made redundant, some people are having less hours because employers are saying, well, we can have you in, but we can't have as many people in. I think they're going to plummet people back into recession mode. So I don't think we've seen the worst of it. In fact, I know the worst is yet to come.
Do you think things will be different now? I mean, you know, the Conservatives have said for a couple of years that the era of austerity is over. And certainly at the beginning of this crisis, the government demonstrated that it will invest huge amounts of money to keep the economy afloat. And the Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, who is himself a Yorkshire MP, has promised to level up the UK economy so that regions don't get left behind.
Today, I can announce that for the first time in our history, the government is going to step in and help to pay people's wages.
Could it be that councils like Barnsley get what they didn't get last time after the financial crash, which is money to plug the gaps?
It could conceivably be the case that conservatism has somewhat changed its spots and they appreciate the importance of councils and therefore they're not going to make the same mistakes again. But this is a matter of urgency. You know, there's a danger in talking about this as something we're going to have to deal with in a few months' time or something. Like many, many, many councils, Barnsley now has an in-year financial gap. It's got an in-year financial gap of £23 million. Now, in a council budget, that, for a place the size of Barnsley, that's a lot of money. And they're very concerned about the next financial year, 2021-22. This is very, very urgent. It's staring everybody in the face. And the question then is to the government, well, what are you going to do?
And if the government don't deliver on their spending promises, is there another way to provide this support to councils?
If they're going to be resolved finally and places are going to get the level of provision that they need, the system needs to be reinvented. It's not just a question of, oh, the government's written a cheque for X billion pounds and now everything's okay. That's dysfunctional, right? Places can and need to stand on their own two feet. I would like to think at some stage that's something that finally we're going to grapple with in this country. A big shock to the system like coronavirus, I suppose one of the few sort of silver linings is that you do get the sense that everything now is sort of up in the air and being contested. And maybe that's one of the things that will be contested.
How important do you think it will be to put places like Thurn's Cove front and centre of any economic recovery plan that we have over the next 10 years?
Well, they're the sort of places that have had this industrial history, which has sort of disappeared and then have sort of uncertainly made their way into the future. To my mind, they're the sort of litmus test of how good and convincing any government's economic policy is. So I think we need to look to them and say, how can we improve people's lives here? And what does a sort of sustainable future economy look like? Because retail and hospitality and distribution centres are much better than nothing. You know, it's very easy to scoff at those things, but better to have a job than not. But these are very, very deep, deep challenges. And I think they've never been deeper, really. And that's now what we've got to get to grips with. Give places a future, give them power, give them autonomy, and then, you know, set them off and see where they go.
John, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was John Harris. You can read his piece about Barnsley at theguardian.com, where you should also watch his excellent and BAFTA-nominated Anywhere But Westminster series. That's it for today and this week. Today's episode was produced by Serena Barker-Singh and Maithili Rao. Sound design was by Axel Kakutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. I hope you have a lovely weekend, and we'll be back on Monday.